More than half a century after Rachel Carson published her book Silent Spring, we know a lot more about pesticides and the dangers they pose to living things, which, when you think about it, is really the point, killing pests. The question is, which is the pest and which is the thing you desire, and can you surgically remove one without hurting the other? The answer is often no, and a resident of Oregon's Lincoln County just received a Lifetime Achievement Award for saying so for decades. Carol Van Strom has spoken out consistently about the use of pesticides. For her work, she got the David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award at the recent Public Interest Environmental Law Conference in Eugene. Last year, she began working with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, or CELDEF. Two guests with us, Carol Van Strom herself. Hi, Carol. Carol Van Strom, are you there? Okay, she must have dropped the line. We'll pick her up. Meanwhile, Kaya Hushke, I think, is with us, who is with the Northwest, and he's the Northwest and Hawaii Community Organizer at CELDEF. Hi, Kai.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So tell us a bit about this David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award that Carol Van Strom won. Who was David Brower himself?
David Brower was one of the leads of the Sierra Club for a number of years. Long-time, big-time activist on environmental protection, and because of that and his notoriety in at least those circles, to get that kind of an award is quite the achievement, because David Brower himself was a Carol Van Strom-type person in his lifetime.
Tell us a bit more broadly about your organization.
Yeah, we've come in and helped communities like Lincoln County, who've been dealing with, you know, corporate projects that are really state protected, like aerial spraying of pesticides. And as you mentioned, you know, you have these evidence of, you know, five decades now when it comes to pesticides through people like Rachel Carson. Yet because our system is so focused on producing and protecting the methods of production, especially those that are quote-unquote efficient, it becomes nearly impossible, it feels like, at the local level at least, to contend with, you know, toxic practices like pesticide use. And so our work's been about helping communities to understand what they're up against, the full apparatus, not just the harm, but also how the system of law functions, and why is it that corporations wield greater power in our communities than we ourselves when it comes to protecting ourselves from things that are clearly harmful like pesticide use. So our work's been about helping communities help themselves and really be the force to change bigger structures of law that really operate to preserve and protect you know, nature and communities themselves, because if we're truly going to get to some level of sustainability, it's not going to come through our current system, unfortunately, because it has a very different outlook about what it wants to achieve.
Carol Van Strom is on the line with us now, and again, the winner of the David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award at the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference, or PILC, in Eugene. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
So tell us about what got you for, you've been working against pesticides for decades now. What got you switched on in the first place?
Well, getting sprayed. Getting sprayed directly, my children especially, and our whole place from drift, but by a county road crew spraying the roadsides, and then within a week or two by the Forest Service spraying the ridges all around our place. And what they were using was a mixture of 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T, which were the ingredients of Agent Orange. So that's essentially what they sprayed us with, and that's how it all got started. My children got very sick. Everything in the river died. Our garden was completely destroyed, pretty much. And within the next month, many of the ducklings and chickens and geese that hatched on our place had gross deformities.
What kinds of deformities?
Oh, some had their feet on backwards. Many of them had crossed beaks. Mm-hmm. And those were the two major things. One of them only had one wing, but they're, you know, most of them didn't survive, put it that way.
So Carol, in those days when you were just, you know, when you got sprayed and when your family got sprayed and you felt sick, did you even know who to turn to first?
Well, first we turned to the county road crew because that was so immediate, you know. And we called the county road department, and they insisted, oh, no, safe as table salt. It's all a coincidence that, you know, the children got sick and the dog died and, you know, the usual. It's safe as table salt. That was their main refrain. And the Forest Service told us the same thing. But meanwhile, we had been over to the OSU library and looked up some of these chemicals and found out that they were not safe as table salt.
So, and I'm going to ask Kai Hushke, I mean, has the attitude changed much over time? I mean, are the responses at least quicker? I mean, we know more about the pesticides a bit now, but I mean, has anything in the process changed greatly over that over the time since the 70s when this was first happening to Carol and her family?
I mean, Carol knows the pesticide world better than I would. I would say no, that it still pretty much churns along the way that it has since the inception of, you know, the chemical world. I mean, unfortunately, even the activists get excited when they, you know, lock down on one particular pesticide and through, you know, whatever means manage to somehow get one particular pesticide banned. The problem is when you start to look at what comes next, they're often worse than the thing that you stopped. And the reality is there's so much out there that, again, the machine basically continues to churn on regardless of how many stories there are similar to Carol's out there, because the system has this view of efficiency, and chemicals provide what the, you know, corporate world sees as something as efficient, and they also then clothe themselves into believing that what's happening isn't harmful, that it can be controlled, it can be regulated, you know, as long as it's administered by a, you know, professional applicator. And it's all these layers of what seem to be safety measures, but are really just, I would say, methods of distraction to convince people that what's happening is safe, all the while it's clear that it's not. So unfortunately, I would say no, and it's not just pesticides, but all kinds of industries continue to hum along regardless of their real impact to people and communities and nature.
Chemicals and people, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Carol Van Strum, who just recently won the David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award for her work against pesticides in Lincoln County. Kai Hushke is with us as well. He's the Northwest and Hawaii Community Organizer for the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. You can join the conversation on the exchange, perhaps share some experiences that happened to you, or maybe talk about times you've run across the work of Carol Van Strum. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Carol, you mentioned 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T getting sprayed on and around your property in the 70s, and that these are components in Agent Orange, and anybody who was alive for the Vietnam War has this immediate revulsion to the sound of that name because it was a horrible defoliant used across Southeast Asia to make sure that we could see the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese troops, and affected a lot of our veterans. I mean, so I can imagine the response was the same from you, but you also had all these effects right in front of you to take in. Once you knew what the stuff was that was getting sprayed near you, what kind of responses did you get from the people in a position to change the behaviors that were resulting in sprays on you?
Well, the first thing that happened was the people in our community. I wrote a letter to the editor of our county paper, and we were fairly new here. We'd only been here a year, but people called us from all over the county and the neighboring counties, saying they had similar experiences. And the result was that we got together and rather naively thought that if we told everyone what was happening, they would stop. But that didn't work, so we sued the U.S. Forest Service and won an injunction against their use of 2,4,5-T. At that time, industry and EPA, thanks to industry lies, did not think that 2,4-D had dioxin in it, which was one of the major problems with those chemicals. Anyway, we won an injunction, which eventually, through subsequent lawsuits, by us and by the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides, resulted in the Forest Service doing a complete 180 and not clear cutting anymore, so they wouldn't have to spray anymore. And the reason for that was that what we brought to federal court, and that's what I documented in my book, was that none of these chemicals had been tested adequately, none of them, that the Forest Service wanted to use, not just 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. We're talking about atrazine, we're talking about glyphosate or Roundup, all these other chemicals that they used on the forests. Most of them had been tested by industrial biotest labs, all of whose test results were fraudulent or non-existent. And there were 88 other labs that were also supposedly testing these chemicals and submitting fraudulent information. So the result was that the federal court said, sorry, Forest Service, you can't use these chemicals because you have to show that they've been adequately tested, and the Forest Service couldn't, of course. So that stopped the use on national forests. The use continues of those same chemicals, except for 2,4-5-T. Those same chemicals, 2,4-D, atrazine, glyphosate, Roundup, they're still used on private timberlands, on state forest lands, on roadsides. They're used all over the place, and the testing has still not been done, of course, to show how bad they are.
And what do you hear about why the testing has not been done?
Well, because no one pays for it. You have to realize the way the Environmental Protection Agency works is they don't do the testing themselves. They tell the companies that make these things that they have to test it. And then the companies don't even submit the entire test data. What they submit to EPA is a summary, their own, of the results of supposed testing. So the only way, it's incredible. I know it's hard for people to believe, and until you actually look at the court records of the trials and other hearings that have been held on these things, it's hard to believe that this could happen, but it has happened.
You mentioned the book that you wrote about this, which I assume is A Bitter Fog, Herbicides and Human Rights.
That's right.
And the author bio for the book lists you as a writer, editor, farmer, parent, and chronic thorn in the side of those who endanger the health and safety of people and the environment. Were there times when you thought, oh, we're just around the corner, this will change, in like the next 5 years, things will be different?
No, because, and you know, at first, that's what we thought. We thought, well, once people know how bad these things are, they won't use them. And then that was long ago. We were very naive. But they're too profitable. And as long as the corporations get away with submitting false information and nothing ever happens to them, and as long as they can influence legislatures to the effect that they have with huge amounts of money, it's very difficult to see things changing.
We're talking about chemicals and people and the sad interactions of the two. Carol Van Strum recently won the David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award for her work against pesticides and herbicides at the recent Public Interest Environmental Law Conference in Eugene. She lives in Lincoln County, Oregon. She works in part with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, and Kai Hushke is the Northwest and Hawaii Community Organizer for that program. You can join us at 800-838-3760 with your thoughts and questions. And emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. Here is a call from Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Carol and Kai.
Yes, good morning. I was heartened to hear Carol just mention dioxins, which is not just one molecule, but it's a class of molecules that are extremely dangerous and comparable to carcinogenic potential of nuclear waste. And what I wanted to say before a brief question, and that is that half of these chemicals are used in urban and suburban areas, and the other half are used in agricultural, and I'm talking about the whole country. So this is a major, major health issue, a public health issue. And the question, brief question I have for Carol is, are there other classes of chemicals that are created in the production of these desired herbicides that they consistently don't talk about or lie about? That's my question.
Right. So other byproducts from the manufacturing use of these pesticides. Carol?
Oh, yeah. Well, there certainly are byproducts. Dioxin is one of them. Anytime you have any mixture, you know, combination of chlorine with hydrocarbons, you're going to get dioxin in your waste products as well as in the product. And that includes things like the pulp and paper industry, which bleaches all of its pulp to make paper and has huge amounts or had huge amounts of dioxin pouring into the rivers where they have all of their factories because they need tons of water to process that pulp. And so dioxin is a major issue. There are other waste products coming from other chemicals. I couldn't name them all, which is another problem that is never mentioned when they come and spray your roadside or spray your forest or your rice fields or whatever, is that the manufacturer of those chemicals produces huge amounts of poisons that are concentrated in the manufacturing areas and pollute rivers, pollute groundwater. It's incredible, as well as the air. So that is a so-called cost of those chemicals that's put on the public rather than on the manufacturers. They just throw the stuff out and let the public be damned, and that's wrong.
Let's take another call. Here's Joseph in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Carol Van Strum and Kai Hushke.
Hi, you guys, and this is really great to hear you because I know the guy who puts on the conference every year. But what I wanted to say was in the Eugene Weekly, we have a list of chemical spraying that they do all over the county, which is kind of very convenient. But I'm just outraged because I called the governor's office and I called Fish and Game yesterday about the two cougars that were euthanized. Mm-hmm. Just find out if there's any research done in the forest by Fish and Game or the state about whether or not these chemicals are forcing, you know, these creatures out of their habitat. You know, not only are we in their habitat, but they're being forced out of their own via, you know, spraying and whatnot. No, none has ever been done. And all the testing, I just wanted to back up everything she said, all the testing is done by the companies. And I'm like, well, why don't we get the fox out of the hen house? So I called Kate Brown, who I know a little bit personally because I used to clean her office. And I just, you know, I left comments. And I just want to thank this lady for her work. And, you know, I believe you also had the people from Triangle Lake on your show a year or two ago talking about how, you know, they've been trying to fight aerial spraying in Oregon for years. And so I really hope Kate maybe will do something about it. And I'm going to call all my local representatives. And thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Joseph. Appreciate that. So Carol, for somebody who's in a position like Joseph is in and they're concerned about things, I mean, where should they start? Where do you recommend they go first to get their complaints addressed?
Boy, that's a tough one. But I'd say tell people, get people together. The more you can get a community together of people objecting, the stronger you are. That's why I'm so encouraged by the community rights movement, because it's encouraging people to do something rather than just complain. And that's what they're doing. They're asserting their right not to be poisoned.
Yeah, I want to get some community rights coverage in before we have to go in about 3 minutes. But so Kai Hushke, I mean, is this something like akin to an opposition to corporate rights, giving communities rights?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it's really about the assertion of a fundamental right that's already there, and a constitutional right, that people have a right to self-determine, self-govern where they live, and most especially around protecting themselves. Unfortunately, our legal system has evolved in such a way that it protects the greatest, the biggest, the strongest economic actors with the most legal protection. So once those pesticides are freed, they then become legally protected through permits and limited liability and commerce clause and state interest and all the various things that try to paint the Carols of the world as the crazy people for trying to stop the harm. And then folks figure out, where should we go? And they keep turning to their government. The problem is the government as intertwined in the activities as the corporations are. So what we have found, it's been communities who've rose up to say no more, and in Lincoln County's case, passed their own law saying we ban aerial spray in order to protect our right to clean air and water. And another element before we leave here is also protect nature itself. So much of the law, whether you want to try to stop something or hold someone to account after the fact, is all about human impact. But the one caller talked about the cougars. Well, what about the rest of nature, the other people out there? And another interesting thing of which Carol has stepped forward on is being the spokesperson for nature in a lawsuit that's happening now in Lincoln County to try to overturn that ban, where she has stood in the shoes of the Siletz River watershed to say that the watershed also has rights. So community rights really is about looking at the full community, and it has been about aiming towards not just, again, the corporation, but the government itself, because those two work hand in hand to continue to do things like poison people and the environment through things like pesticide use. Mm-hmm. And so it is about turning against that and changing that, and as Carol said, you know, seizing it and moving it, because the begging and pleading has been going on for 30 or 40 years now in Oregon with no effect.
So, Carol, in about 20 seconds, Lincoln County voters passed the community rights measure. It was taken to court. Judge heard arguments in October. Where does it stand now?
It's in the hands of the judge, and she hasn't ruled yet.
Wow. Okay. Arguments in October and still waiting for something. It was supposed to happen by the end of the year, and we're obviously 3 months into this one. Carol Van Strum, the winner of the David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award at the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference in Eugene. Good to talk to you. Hugh Kaihushki from the Northwest. He's the Northwest and Hawaii Community Organizer at the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.